Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On, clinical sexologist with Xander Keg, licensed social worker. I'm going to hand this over to Xander, as I always do, because he does such a wonderful job introducing the guests on our show.
Thank you, Dr. On. Our guest today is Erica Xander, and Erica describes herself as being born as a boy in December of 1952, and at around the age of 5 or 6, she would now and then borrow items of clothing from a little girlfriend of hers. When she was 15, she happened to stumble on a newspaper article about the famous Swedish photographer Christer Stromholm and his transsexual friends in Paris. So he was taking pictures. This was Christer, not Erica, taking pictures of these individuals in Paris. However, Erica felt that she was 100% heterosexual, but with this feeling, I really should have been a girl. So she tried to blend in with transvestites, but in her own admission says that she didn't do very well because they were mostly donning frilly dresses and she was wearing faded jeans and sneakers. I love that, comfortable clothing. Erica met her wife-to-be when they were both in their 20s, and 3 years later, they got married. Another 5 years later, they had a family comprised of 2 sons. Eventually, she managed to convince the Stockholm gender team that she'd be better off with a low dose of estrogen. Erica is also the author of the acclaimed book, Trans Actions. Erica, welcome to the Umbrella Hour. It's so great to have you on.
Thanks very much.
You are very welcome. Would you mind telling us a little bit about your book? How has it been received?
I realize I probably should write a book. I thought I would have new things to say and a new point of view. And then I knew another man in the trans community, and he worked with a publishing company. And then he decided to buy the company. He told me that I would like you to write a book, and preferably you write it in English for the world market. I'd had a few pages to start it off with. And then I decided that I would begin with a 1 year diary leading up to my surgery. I was on the road to that. This diary part ends with my gender reassignment. And then after that, I divided it into separate chapters dealing with different subjects, wide variety of angles. In the end, it was quite a long manuscript. Actually, I bought a special type, which was easy to read already in very small font, you know? So we could get it all into a not very, very thick book, only a thick book. So I think it was well received. So at least during the first year, I got emails from people in America, South America, Japan, who thanked me for my lovely book. And then one guy, he was a guy at the time, and I think a student, he said that I didn't know how to handle my situation, but after I finished your book, I got out into the kitchen and told all the other students in the dorm that I'm a trans woman, just like that. And I felt very happy and proud about doing that.
It must feel good to have people not only read your book, but then get in touch with you, give you congratulations, but also to share with you how it impacted their life. Did you find that to be a rewarding process when you heard from people?
It was very, very nice. And I was also surprised that they actually took the time to try to find me. And I got emails from the Netherlands, from Japan, from South America. So it was very rewarding. And I think also quite a few people felt that this was a brand new type of book on this subject. I'm still quite proud of it, actually, 20 years later.
Yeah, because a lot of the books originally, when people were starting to get their books published, they were memoirs, autobiographies. It was quite a bit later that people started writing books that had maybe a social component or activist-oriented component or advocacy pieces. Jameson's Green Book was one of those books, I think, that blended his personal story with the larger social context. And it sounds like your book is similar like that. It blends your personal story with the larger issues.
Yeah, definitely similar in that way. And actually, we haven't met for quite a few years now, but I think I consider him a very close friend. I met him once when he was in Stockholm and gave a few presentations. And after that, we kept in touch. And another time when he was in Oslo with his wife, he got in touch with me. I said that before flying back to America, can't you come to Stockholm and stay with me and my wife for a few days? And they did. So that's very nice.
That is really nice. We just did two episodes recently, and James was on both of them. You'll get to hear those when you listen. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about your book? Did it bring any media attention? Did you have any negative?
Nothing.
That's wonderful.
Only praise and thanks for writing this book. And also kind of got in touch. I reached out. Already in the early 70s, I was in quite a few radio interviews. There were articles from different newspapers, magazines, etc. There were new radio programs or radio interviews. And there was, for the Stockholm Pride, they always wanted to find a person to focus on. And our biggest Swedish daily newspaper, Dagens Nyheter, they asked the Pride organization for someone to talk to. And they said, well, this time you shouldn't talk to just another lesbian or gay man. You should talk to Erica. And they did. So there was a big half page in this morning paper with actually a color photo. There were not many color photos in that magazine. And the same day, I think I got an email from a famous Swedish reporter, journalist. She's had a numerous different TV shows, etc. on. And she wrote a very humble email. If you don't know, my name is so-and-so, and I have this and that TV show, and I've interviewed people like Nelson Mandela, the famous South African liberation, former president, prisoner. She listed numerous well-known people. She said, I want to do an interview with you. It was half an hour's interview, and the day this was going to be broadcast, I heard on the local radio that morning, well, we'll all have to watch this interview with Erica on TV. And on the tube to work, I sat beside a man who read the morning paper, and there was a full page about me. I don't remember who had written it, when, where. There was a full page about me with a color photograph and said, just to advertise this TV interview.
What an honor that she reached out to you and wanted to interview you.
It was a half hour interview with yours truly, and the magazine, the newspaper articles were, of course, about this TV program in the afternoon. And obviously it went down so well with her audience that a year later, she said, do you think that your wife could consider being on the show as well? We can give you a full hour if we can do it with the two of you. And at that time, she moved to another workplace and her colleagues had no idea she was living with a trans woman. So she just said, well, that's fine. Then I won't have to tell my new colleagues who I'm living with. She was a teacher. I'll just tell my colleagues and the parents that they should watch that show on television to know about my life.
Well, that's wonderful. It's not always the case that our family members are included in our stories, whether that's in our books, when we're interviewed for either radio or television or newspaper or magazine, when we're brought in to do speaking at some organization. It's not very often that our family's involved. In a lot of cases, our family members don't even have the same support networks and systems that we have as we're going through transition. When a trans person is going through a transition, everybody in their family is going through a transition too. It's not just the trans person. There's a lot that is going into it. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your family?
We met in 1972, and at that time I was quite open and out and about as an ordinary woman. I never dressed as a tranny. So I decided that when I meet a woman that feels like this might be the one for me, I'm going to tell her already from the beginning. I've met way too many where the wife realizes this after many years and gets a shock, and not all that rarely leave her former husband because of that. So I decided to tell her after we'd only been together for a few months. And she also lived in another part of the country. We met just for a weekend. And this gave her some time to think as well. I think I probably spent 2 or 3 hours before I actually dared to tell her what I wanted to discuss. So when finally I got there, I said, "Well, sometimes I dress in women's clothes, you know." And she just said, "Oh, was it only that?" I was getting really worried that you were sick or something, seriously ill. So she fell asleep again, and I lay there awake for a couple of hours, you know, all stressed up. We never had any problems with it. I didn't really know what to do about it when we got the kids, though. But after our second son was born as well, for 3 more years, I kind of went out on town as a woman now and again. And usually, though, like I said, in jeans and sneakers and trying to be quite ordinary for my age. And when our youngest son was almost 3, I suddenly just felt that I don't have to do this anymore. I had no idea why. I didn't try to get rid of it. I even doubted if this could really be for real. Don't I need this anymore? So once I just decided, intellectually, I decided that I will bring my clothes to work. I will get into my female jeans and jacket, leave the office as a woman to just to feel what it's like and if I have forgotten what it's like and why I did it. And I didn't understand what I was doing, actually. So that was the only time I tried it. And then I had those biblical 7 nice, calm, quiet years. And then it's strange with these 7-year cycles, because then suddenly I started feeling a bit frustrated, not really knowing what was wrong. And I could still localize the holes in my ears. I put all my 7 rings back in my ears, and my colleagues didn't seem to mind. So in spite of my having a kind of managing position, low level managing position, but my colleagues didn't seem to mind, so I let my hair grow again. And in surprisingly few years, it was waist length again. And my colleagues still, they didn't say anything about it. Then after that, I suddenly decided that I didn't need it anymore. So I cut my hair, got rid of my rings in my ears, and had 7 very nice, calm, quiet years without any trans feelings at all. And it wasn't until I attended a meeting, probably something was beginning to stir. So when an older friend told me that she would give a presentation about her starting to live as a woman at 70 plus or something, she invited me to come listen. And when I did that, something started to irritate me. It was something, I didn't feel really comfortable with the situation anymore. It wasn't long until I decided that I had to not dress as a woman, but take on a female position in this LGBT organization, and not mainly as a trans person, but as a lesbian person. No, I was felt very much welcome there, and only half a year later, I think I went to one of the yearly big congresses for that organization, you know, with several hundred people, and probably said something from the podium. So after that, well, quite a few people around the country knew who this Erica Sander was almost before I started to waking her up again.
How many sons do you have?
2. One of them is born in 78, the other in 1980, almost 56 and 54. The oldest one has 2 sons. They were born in 2009 and 11. The oldest one is 15, and the younger one has 3 kids, 15 and 18. The youngest one is 6. There's no problems whatsoever. I don't know what the youngest one has done about it, but I know that my oldest son, his wife, she, when their sons were maybe 6 and 8 or something, she said, "Well, you know, Marcus is your father." Yeah, I said. And Erica is Marcus's father. Okay, they said, and then went on playing.
Yeah, it's as simple as that, right? It doesn't have to be complicated.
My youngest son, I don't know what they've done about it. His three kids, all the five kids, they just call me Erica, so it's no problem. But I'm granny, grand this or grand that, you know, I'm just Erica. But they know, all know who I am. That's the important part.
That's wonderful.
You mentioned seven calm years twice. What made those years calm?
I just felt that I don't need this anymore. I didn't understand why. I actually tried once more to present myself as a woman on town and felt that it doesn't mean anything.
Sometimes when we're not thinking about who we are, it gives us some peace of mind. Would you agree?
It could have been. Yeah, probably, because then something started to stir and annoy me. And I started growing my hair long again and didn't really know why. So when, for the first time, I presented myself as a female, I think it was 14 years since last time I'd done it.
Were you involved in any conversation with your wife or your children about those fluctuations? Or did it just sort of happen?
It just happened. It just happened.
So nobody said anything? Like your wife didn't say, I've noticed that you haven't been wearing women's clothes for a while now. It wasn't talked about.
No, and one reason might be that for the last 3 years when I presented myself as a woman, it was usually in blue jeans and a shirt or jacket anyway. So the difference wasn't that big, you know, and no high heels, just wooden clogs or sandals.
It wasn't a dramatic shift. When I read your bio, you described the frilly dress-wearing individuals and you in contrast with your jeans and t-shirts. So you're describing just regular clothing, comfortable clothing, that as a person who used to be a lesbian, is wearing comfortable clothes, which meant they were mostly men's clothes, your attire was just that casual look. I mean, of course, there's a difference between the jeans you would get in the men's department and the jeans you get in the women's department at the stores, but not always. There are jeans that people can get. Jeans are jeans. It makes sense. The only major difference then would have been the length of your hair, because you describe it as getting very long. And
yeah.
So the length of your hair was the marker for if you were feeling or wanting to present as more of a man or a woman, was your hair length.
We are going to take our first commercial break. This is Dr. On with Xander Keg. Our guest is Erica Xander. We hope that you have been enjoying the conversation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest is Erica Xander. Let's pick up where we left off. As you were getting all the media attention, how were your children handling it?
Quite a few years with media attention was before they were born or before they were old enough to know anything about this. Well, for quite a few years, I didn't dress at all as a woman, and then I kept it out of the family. My youngest son was in high school, I think, before he ever saw me dressed as a woman. And that was in jeans and just another shirt and some mascara. No dramatic change for them in that way. And actually, when I first told them, and they weren't living at home, my wife suggested that I just write them a very sincere email about this, trying to describe it and making sure that they realized I was still their father, mainly their father. And I sent it. I was very nervous about their reactions. And I think it was only an hour later, my oldest son replied. He said, well, I was out in town walking. There was snow on the ground and the sun was shining. It was so lovely, everything. And then I got back to my room. I opened my computer. I checked my emails. I found your email. And this made me even happier. So that was probably, he wasn't too surprised. I guess he felt that it wouldn't change me personally, that it was already the person I intended to be.
That's very beautiful that your son would respond that way.
Do you think you would have had a different outcome if you had come out today opposed to back then?
I've noticed from young friends and acquaintances that it's obviously much easier for them just to tell their parents and friends, etc., that I feel like a guy or I feel like a girl, woman. And I don't think it's all that dramatic for the parents either, because they also live in this new world and they're used to it. There's a lot of trans and gay entries in media, newspapers, magazines, TV, radio. People are open about it in town, etc., etc. So obviously it's not that dramatic anymore that people know so much more about it, I think.
I find that so interesting, don't you, Xander, compared to where we live?
Yeah, I mean, what's similar, of course, is the easier access to transition. Even nowadays in the States, if you live in a very rural area, as long as you have a computer and or a smartphone, you can get access once you turn 18 to a number of telehealth companies that are specializing in providing assessments and prescriptions for hormones in particular. That has eased that burden of people that live in those more rural areas. That question that you asked on about the what made those calm years calm, and I was thinking about how one of the criticisms that I've heard more recently, say at least 2 years, is that with the young people, there seems to be a hyper focus on gender identity, right? They're learning about it in schools, they're being asked, their friends are talking about it. The criticism is that there's a hyper focus on the internal sense of who am I? What are my labels? And that hyper focus or that intense like internal scrutiny might actually not be a good thing, because then it can create anxiety and depression. So it's interesting to think about, to be able to have those calm years means that there's not a focus And then when there's not a focus, there's sort of a relief or a release from the desire to appear to other people in society as a woman or a man. So it is interesting because it challenges to a certain degree the notion that we know who we are, we're going to be that person our whole entire lives, and people just need to get on board. But it is true that there are people who wax and wane, and there are people who remain quite androgynous or ambiguous or non-binary, as people might say mm-hmm. now.
One thing I suddenly remembered that I will have to tell you about, it was in 97, I think, at the end of my 7 frustrating years, I went to a presentation with an older friend and suddenly realized that, well, probably have to do something about it. And like I said, got in LGBT organization again. And a year later, in 98, I was in Paris for a meeting in a standardization group. And I had a couple of days after the meeting that I stayed in Paris, and then found, probably I'd read or heard about it, a very quite famous gay bookstore. It's called Gays the Word. Very, very good. And in that store, they also had a lot of international magazines. So I found a stand with lesbian magazines from Germany, France, America, UK. Started leafing through those magazines, and then suddenly got kind of a shock. I felt the floor actually shaking under my feet, and I realized, well, I'm not primarily a woman, I'm a lesbian. So that kind of, at that moment, everything fell into place. And I remember that when I thought I was a transvestite or something, in spite of not feeling like one of them, I frequently went to nearby lesbian club where I was accepted. That was a bit strange in the 90s something, even earlier, 70s, in the 70s, actually, I went to lesbian clubs and stuff. They accepted me, probably because I was dressing more like them than like a tranny, you know?
A frilly dress in the lesbian bar would have been suspicious, mm. or at least suspect.
Right.
We were speaking just before we hit record, and you had mentioned that it's psychological, but also biblical, this idea of 7 good years, the 7 bad years, called it the 7 calm years and the 7 frustrating years. What is this concept of 7 good, 7 bad years?
Obviously, it is something very real, because I heard a man, organization expert, he said that frequently, surprisingly often, it's the same with organizations or companies or whatever, that they work in 7-year cycles, and some things might be good, and then they going around in a circle, and then back to good again in 7 years or whatever. So it seems to be, well, no one really knows why, but it seems to be a truth rather than a myth.
There's a similar interval in the developmental, right, in the psychological developmental phases of going from one phase or stage to another. Because I'm thinking about references like in a marriage, you might hear somebody say 7-year itch. People might start to cheat. Or you also hear it used in how every 7 years, the cells in our body are new. There's something in our world that there's some truth to this, because it shows up in a lot of different places. What's the biblical reference for this 7 years?
No, I don't know. I think it was the Jews in Egypt, one of the starts for this. I think 7 years in Egypt and 7 years traveling back a few miles to Israel, to Palestine. I don't know. Another thing I was throwing my notes here, that when I decided that I would have to start living as a woman again, I told my boss work. It was in a technical consultancy, mainly engineers, mainly male, few females. And he just said, well, invite yourself to a group meeting with all the different groups. And you tell them in each group that you're going to start living as a woman, coming as a woman to work. And I did that. And most of them just said, okay. No one was especially worried or confused or anything. Well, after I told them, some of them were getting frustrated. Why do you have to wait so long? Can't you come on Monday as a woman? There were some things I wanted to do and get mentally prepared. And eventually I came to work as a woman. There was a vase with flowers on my desk and not that many females in the company took me out for lunch, etc. And I immediately felt that they didn't have to even to try. They obviously recognized me as a female from the start. I was integrated in their group, and not one of the guys anymore. It was very nice.
That is very
nice. To make this first day dramatic and memorable, I had chosen the beginning of the week, a Monday when I was going to fly to Paris for a standardization meeting. So I had told the people standardization group two meetings before. And the first reaction was, why do you have to wait two meetings? Why can't you come next time? That morning, I went to work in the morning as a woman, met all my colleagues, and then went straight to the international airport with my male passport and my male name on the ticket and flew to a meeting in Paris. An intended statement, both to myself and my colleagues, and those in the international standardization group, etc., everyone at the same time.
That's really beautiful. I'm a seminary graduate. I have a master's in theology. I'm rattling my brain trying to remember this biblical reference, and then it hit me, Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Jubilee is the idea that for the Israelites, every seventh year to take a Sabbath year. There's many biblical references with the number seven, but I think that's probably the one that is the most well known, is the idea of having the Jubilee, having that Sabbath year every 7 years.
One more thing so I don't forget. After we had officially had a separated, my wife and I, we still lived together for 7 years and then gradually drifted apart. I stayed on in our flat for another few months. And during that time, I found a lovely younger woman on a lesbian contact site on the internet. She was just beautiful. She didn't look like one of the other dykes. You know, she had long blonde hair and lovely smile. But being 10 years younger than me, I didn't really expect her to answer. But I sent her a message and said, I recognize you from the this or that club. And she said, well, I think we met twice. That was a good start.
So that means she knew who you were.
A couple of weeks later, she brought one of her friends as a security, mental support, etc., for a date. For a few months, actually half a year, she claimed that we weren't a couple because she had decided she didn't want to live in a new relationship like that. We were close friends. And it was 8 or 9 months until we went to a party with only gay people, and a man there started talking to us, and he said, are you friends or are you a couple? And I decided not to show anything. I just waited. And then she said, we're a couple. She moved that back. So eventually she said, we've been a couple since our first day.
I like that. I like the idea of giving people time. So are you still in relationship now with this woman?
Yeah, 16 years now. And for the first 8, I was living in Stockholm. My work was in Stockholm, and she was living in a smaller town, only some 20, 30,000 people town, I think, 80 kilometers to the northeast on the coast as well. So for 8 years, we kept up weekends and vacations relationship. So every other weekend, took the bus to Stockholm. On the next weekend, I took the bus to Norrtälje. Eventually, when my possible retirement was, I saw it on the horizon, I decided, well, I'll move to your town. We were both quite sure at the time that we probably would never live together. But with prices being as they are in Stockholm, I sold my flat and I bought a house of my own in this town, in the oldest suburb-owned houses part of the town. She lives on the other side of the town, which means 2 kilometers. Frequently, we meet during the week as well, just for some errands, or she comes here with a newspaper, or we go out and have lunch. And then with her living in a flat, Friday afternoon, she comes here, we go out and have dinner together, and she stays with me until Sunday evening or Monday morning, and it's very nice. My sons and their families really love her as well, so that's nice.
That is nice. Do you have contact with your ex-wife?
It's never been complicated. I realize we're quite different, so we don't really hang out together, but we have no problem seeing each other. And only last summer she came here to spend the day with me, and we went out to have lunch and took a walk in the park. We're still friends, very good friends.
That's very nice.
And I'm glad that she's found a new partner as well. She actually met him before I met Katarina. So that's very good. Actually, it was a guy I knew from a band I'd listened to several times. She'd heard that band as well on a couple of big parties, including our own 50 years party. She's my age, you know. We had invited a lot of friends to dinner and this live band. She actually had no idea that he supplied the music for our big 50th anniversary party. So he was a bit annoyed that when he met her at another party, just as a guest, he was a bit annoyed that she didn't recognize him. And he played at two or three birthday parties that she had attended, and she hadn't seen him.
Well, yeah, because, you know, when you're at a party, the band is in the background. But I would imagine as an artist, as a musician, you want people not just to know your music, but to know you also. It does make sense. It sounds like he got over it, though.
Yeah.
You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Erica Zander. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. This is the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest is Erica Zander. Let's pick up where we left off. It was such a nice story that you told about how people had received you, welcomed you. And I don't think nothing I've ever heard or experienced necessarily, such as your peers welcoming you at work, buying you flowers, taking you out to lunch. I was blown away that they were open and receiving and saying to you, why wait 2 weeks? I'm thinking, wow, this is magnificent.
That's nice. I'm glad I could make you happy, but also a bit worried that obviously most people have more problems, you know, much more problems with things like that.
But it's also good for us to be able to show that some of us just have the regular problems,
yeah,
right, of just life. And that's okay too, right? Some of us are living our best life. I know I am. So that's okay, right? That's okay too.
And especially, I forgot to mention my mother, because of course this was a problem for her when first in 1973 or something, 72. I told my parents because I realized I couldn't live at home anymore if they didn't know about my trans side. And it didn't go down very well. So I soon moved to my own place. And it was a bit of a problem, quite a problem for quite a few years. But then eventually my mother came around, and for the last 20, 25 years, this has been no problem at all for her. And she was soon to be 99. I moved her to this small town to get her closer, and my brother lives in this side of the city as well. I moved her here only on the 5th of February, and we got her into a very, very nice retirement home, and regrettably, she died already the 21st. But at least I was mainly happy when they called me from that place and told me that your mother actually sadly died at 5:30 this morning. A guy called me at 6:01 in the morning, and I realized that was my dominating feeling was happiness. At first, I didn't know why. And then I realized that after 40 years as a widow in her semi-detached house, she was taken care of here. She had staff around her. She got her food served. And I visited her every other day, you know, 3-4 times a week the first time to get her installed here. So that felt very nice. I would have been frustrated and sad and disappointed if she just died in her bed after having lived alone for 40 years.
Absolutely. It makes a big difference. Well, Erica, it has been such a joy having you on the show and hearing all about your life and your family and the work that you've done. Thank you for coming on the Umbrella Hour and sharing all that with us.
Thank you, Erica. It's been wonderful. You have been listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. We hope that you enjoyed listening to the conversation with Erica Xander. Please join us next time. Thank you for listening.